Welcome to the Gateway Podcast, where we get a chance to sit and talk to the outstanding professionals who serve in the 37 Training Wing. I get the privilege to host this podcast and serve as Warhawk Nation's Command Chief. So, without further delay, let's jump into it. As a reminder to all listeners, all topics discussed are unclassified, and the views expressed by our guests and hosts are not necessarily the position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any government agency. All right. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into the Warhawk Podcast. It's me, Chief Carlos Damian. I got a special guest here today. I got the Air Education and Training Command Chief Chad Bickley. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, kind sir, for an introduction of yourself.
Well, thanks for having me down here, Chief Damian. Chad Bickley, the AATC Command Chief. I've had the honor and privilege of serving our United States Air Force for 31 years. I'm from a very small town in Southwest Virginia. Not a lot there, so I am eternally grateful for everything the Air Force has given me. I will always be in debt to them. Longtime defender. Was also an MTI for 5 years, so it's always good to come back to Lackland and come back home, as I say. And then I think this is my fifth command chief gig. Spent a lot of time downrange, a lot of deployments. My last was I was the command chief over in Baghdad, which is sort of my dream job, to lead airmen in a combat zone. So married, family's the most important thing to me in my life. Three kids and a wife, they'll be with me forever. So I'm going to invest in them as much as I can. And that's a nutshell on Chad Bickley. I don't like talking about myself, so that's about the most you're going to get from me today. So on me.
Can you tell us about your fur baby?
I have a dog. It's a poodle. I never imagined in my life that I would have a poodle, but it's the most high-speed poodle I've ever seen. I never in my life thought I'd put a jacket on a dog, but I've put a jacket on a dog before, so...
I just had to throw that out there because I've seen you out there walking that dog.
Yeah, anybody that's seen me parading around with a daggone poodle in a jacket knows that. But no, I love the dog. Dog's actually a family member for us. So thanks for asking about Bailey.
So this is the Mecca for a lot of different things. I would say that this is a Mecca, having the Air Force Security Forces Center here. Obviously, we have the 737 training group coming for two is basic military training. We have IAFA. We have the 59th Medical Wing, all fall under your purview. Lots of different mission sets over here. 16th Air Force, all these things going on over here. And you get a chance to come home as a defender. What's that feel like coming home to somewhere where you are not? Well, two phases. This one, we have you as a defender going through your technical training here. I'm sure it was here. And then you went through basic training here and then coming full circle now. What is that like? What are some of the things that conjure up the memories as you walk the base?
So I think it goes back to the Air Force gave me this opportunity. So, you know, December 15th, 2 days ago, was my 31 years in the Air Force. Never once when I was out of step or getting my butt ripped in BMT did I ever think I would be the AATC Command Chief. Never once when I went through tech school at Camp Bullis and then at that time up the Fort Dix did I ever think that I would be back here, back at AATC. Sitting at the parade grounds with you, never once did I think, hey, I would be the AATC Command Chief. So things that never went through my mind, I always looked at service as bloom where you're planted. And I think sometimes we worry about too much what's next and just enjoying that opportunity. But once again, I go back to who in the world would ever thought this small kid from Castlewood, Virginia, you know, closest McDonald's is 15 minutes away, closest stoplight is 15 minutes away, would ever be sitting in this opportunity to be the senior enlisted in first command. It's surreal. I have to, and you know, every time I come here, I say that, like, I can't believe, every day I wake up and pinch myself. Like, I am so just internally grateful for the Air Force. We want to talk about often what's wrong with the Air Force. You know, there's always things we need to be getting after. But I always ask people, what are you doing to make the Air Force better? So I just can't be more proud to be a part of the Air Force. They've did so much for me. So it's surreal. You're right.
So that being surreal, who got you here? Who are the people who poured into you, especially early on in your career? that really pushed you?
That's a good question. So my first supervisor, I tell the story at many ALS graduations. He was more concerned about parking the vehicle and listening to Meatloaf on the radio. Weapon was constantly misplaced.
Meatloaf's an old singer.
Yeah, out there. Meatloaf is not a delicatessen served at the DFAC. It can be, but it's also a high speed band. And he did not want to invest in me. We did training, signing a 797. But training wasn't conducted. We did feedback, a form that said feedback I annotated was conducted, wasn't conducted. So there was some people really early on that caught me, but I think the ones that really stuck with me and have built me today was my time at the 820th. Names that some of you are familiar with, the former ACC command chief, AFSCME command chief, Rick Parsons was a huge influence on me. There was another chief at the 820th a lot of people know, spend a lot of time with the Army and the Rangers, is Randy McCormick, huge influence on me. There was a hard-nosed gunny highway senior master sergeant that looked like, gunny highway from Heartbreak Ridge, named Jess Naylor. He was the one that taught me the hardcore discipline. He was extremely hardcore on me, but I learned so much. But just those three individuals, and as you go up in the ranks, like, I would not be here today if it wasn't for Major General Thad Bibb, right? He was the one that recommended me for command chief at Milden Hall. I ended up working for him as his command chief at 18th Air Force. I would not be here today without the Bibbs. But if you look over time, I did not get here on my own. Everybody had a little piece that I've picked up. And that's what I tell people is everybody I know, I've picked up something from them, maybe good, bad, and that shaped and molded me. But those are the names that really stand out that got me where I need to be today, for sure. I didn't get here on my own.
What are some of the challenges that they help you overcome? Like, when you look at you back at your 31 years in service as an NCO, I was like, you probably have something in every tier group that help like mold you. Some of those though that, we talk about resiliency, like it's something you build at a three piece meal at Popeyes, but it's not necessarily that. Resiliency is some of the hard knocks that you learned out there. What are some of the adversities you dealt with in your career that helped you get to where you're at right now?
So I'll add one more name to that list. The guy's name is an 06. He's retired and he's a legend in SF, and his name's Don Derry, Colonel Derry. And we were all together at the 820th. And I look at each one of those and I could sort of talk about, I already talked about with Naylor. Naylor was the one that at PT in the morning, we had these little high speed, they call them Ranger panties, these little green PT shorts that are like 3 inches that I sometimes still wear around on base when I run, but I don't really care who sees me at 5:30 in the morning. But we had to have the button back, but the button on the back had to be buttoned, right? And he'd be the one that says, "Hey, your button." And that really taught me the attention to detail. Colonel Derry taught me organizational skills. He taught me charisma. A lot of the things that I get quoted today, I've taken from Don Derry. Rick Parsons taught me the humility. He taught me the compassion to listen. Randy McCormick taught me the drive and discipline. Your General Bibbs of the world taught me accountability. And I tell you, and I could give you examples of each of those, but one day with General Bibb, I came into the office and I started tap dancing around. He's like, "Chief, that's not the way we operate. We operate on a culture of accountability." And for now, I tell you, I ingrain accountability wherever I go. I think it's one of the best traits as a leader. If you make a mistake, you own it, and you'll be amazed at how things quickly go the proper direction when you own something, is you just own up. But each one of those individuals taught me something, and I could go down the list and say, "Hey, I did this and they taught me." But obviously I floundered with each one of them, and they gave me those skills that have brought me to where I'm at today.
Any time in particular, like the huge piece of adversity that you overcame? It's coming to mind.
There's been that, I would just say things happen. Sometimes in the Air Force, you get caught up in gossip. I hate it. I hate gossip and drama. There's been a couple of times I've got caught into that, and it was my fault. And, they just really talk to me about, hey, admit it, move on, and just be done with it, right? And sometimes we're our own worst enemy, and we dwell. And I know you do this probably too. Is something happens and you dwell on it.
Yeah,
is absolutely. Sometimes it is the hardest thing to acknowledge and just move out. And there was some, you know, nothing like, I always tell people, none of this stuff was criminal, legal, immoral, and ethical. It's just that things happen and you dwell on them and you're like, man, I wish I would have never said that. I wish I'd have never done that. And it just haunts you. You're in bed at night thinking about it. And then finally a couple of them just said, you've got to put that crap behind you and move on. And so, you know, nothing I would say is wow, that wow moment for me, but just little paper cuts along the way for sure. Some much deeper than others though.
So we used to ask this as a military training instructor, you know, one of our things, hey, why'd you join? And in the podcast, I like to ask that the guests, why do you join? Why are you here?
So I told you where I'm from. Great place. No one locks their doors. You break down the side of the road, somebody's going to stop and help you. Everybody waves. You go by. You don't know who the person is. You wave to them. It's nice, polite. There's just not a whole lot there. And so when I was, you know, 17 years old, I started thinking I wanted to do something different. I wanted to be on a winning team. We talk about this a lot. Like, you know, why did the Bulls win all their championships? They were on a winning team. They had high standards. I wanted to be in a winning organization. I wanted to be, whether it was the United States Marine Corps, the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, you name it. I wanted to be on a team that was bigger. And when I joined the Air Force, we are the most powerful, best Air Force in the world, right? And I wanted to be on a team. I wanted to be on a team that wins, right? A team of winners. I didn't want to go work, and I'm not beating up on jobs outside the gate, but I didn't want to go just do an average job. I wanted to be on the best. And that's why I joined the Air Force. And what an honor and privilege it is to wear this uniform each and every day, the cloth of our nation. I think we've become very entitled. I think people think it's a right to wear this uniform. It is an honor and privilege to wear the uniform, the cloth of our nation, and bring hope to people that haven't had hope in a long time. Think about it each and every day. Like, think about what's going on in the Middle East right now. I don't go to bed at night and worry about a rocket coming into my house at Randolph Air Force Base. And here's the deal. We can have the best diplomats, the best State Department, you name it. But if we don't have a military to back that up, you have to have a military that backs it up, and we do. And so I just think we take for a lot of things for granted. And the military that I serve in, what an honor and privilege it is. What a blessing it is to be in the military and serve our nation and serve others. You can tell I love doing this. I don't know what the crap I'm going to do when I get out. Maybe push carts at Walmart. I don't know. It's, yeah.
We met
something like, gung-ho.
We met maybe 21, 22 years ago.
Sure.
And, you know, you're 31 years deep now. What are your goals? What are you working on? What are some things that you're doing to stay fresh, stay relevant, you know, refresh your body, refresh your mind, your spirit, work on the calf pillars? What are you doing to get after
that? So, you know, I tend to be transparent. Is there's some, you know, I'm 49. I turned 50 this next year.
Whoa.
So, yeah. I feel 60 though, right? You know, so I'm starting to do a lot of reflection on, you know, what have I accomplished in life? What do I want to accomplish in life? What do I want to do going forward, right? You know, but, you know, I read a lot. I think General Mattis talks about as military leaders, the reason or the way we remain teachable is by reading. So I read a lot. I read a ton. I read a lot from military leaders. I'm starting to read some self-help type books, but I've got to start one day. I did a terrible job, full transparency, in preparing what's next. I have no idea if this is my last assignment. I mean, there's not many more you could do. I will go with what my family says, but I've got to start preparing one day what will happen when I leave the military. But I'm the type of person that I sprint to the end, and sometimes to my detriment that I won't put stock in what's next. So I've got to really start thinking about what's next. But I think what's next for me a lot will be centered around my family. So just a lot of self-reflection. I'm getting to that point where you turn 50. Nobody in this room is 50, perhaps. There might be one. Are you 50? No, I'm the only one that's going to be 50.
I'm right behind you.
Well, so it just causes you to reflect and pause on life a little bit. So, and then I have not did a good job of taking care of myself over the years physically, and it's starting to catch up. I love to run. I love to bike, but, you know, aches, pains every day that I did not invest in that I wish I could tell airmen to invest in it. And I know several people that's gotten out with medical records about two sheets, and they're in bad shape now. I sure hope that's not me when I get out. So.
So you're a reader.
I love reading.
I went this weekend. So we had daughter day. Okay. And we got their Christmas shopping. If I go into Barnes and Nobles, I'm coming out. Like I'm coming deep. I don't want to say it on the podcast because then my wife, Shauna, she's going to hear this. And she's like, you spent how much in Barnes and Noble? Yeah. And I have a Kindle, which makes it even worse. Like I'm addicted to reading. A lot of good books out there right now. What are your books, right? What are the books right now that you're like?
The book that I just finished was called Nimitz at War. And that was invaluable to me. And people are saying, what do you want to be a aircraft carrier? But that book brought me so much knowledge of what happened in World War II from the and a lot of people don't know this. He's from Fredericksburg in Texas. The World War II Museum is up there. And it's fantastic.
Right there in the Hill Country.
Yep. I went there and I bought the book from the bookstore. And I didn't know what I'd think about it, but I got into it and I read it. And the thing that I found fascinating is the challenges that he dealt with in the Pacific is the same challenges we will deal with, right? I.e., Admiral Halsey pulls away. He doesn't have comm because it's radio silence. We talk about we may be dealing with that. We talk about contested logistics. He dealt with all that. So that's the book I'm reading. Just got done. The other book I just reread is called The Relentless Elimination of Hurry. I've got to go. I've got to pause and be present. I mean, I'm the one, once again, transparency here, you know, I'm at my child's choir the other night and I got there 30 minutes early to save seats. Everybody's talking. I'm sitting there on my iPad getting after it, right? And family wasn't there yet. When they got there, I was able to pause. But what if somebody wanted to talk to me? I was in uniform, but I have got to learn to be able to take it down a level because sometimes this consumes me. And I'm trying to just sit and pause to spend time thinking a lot. I think if you take 30 minutes and close a door, you're amazed at what you can figure out and think. But I've got to learn how to set those balances. Right now, my balances are not good. I'm a hypocrite sitting telling other people to be balanced and resilient. And my balance is way on the left end. I need to come back to the right, but I'm working hard to get there. So
I'll change it up in the questions here. Okay. So can't be family.
Okay.
But you have three people at your dinner table that you can have.
Okay.
Dead, alive. Doesn't matter. And again, like what people get caught up on this question, right. And I give you a little bit of time to think as I walk the dog on this a little bit, but people get caught up in the question, like they have to have the perfect answer or like whatever you're feeling right now. That's the nature of the beast. And when it comes to this, these aren't prefabricated questions, but if you had three people right now that come to mind that you'd like to have dinner with, living or dead.
I wish I could have five.
You get three.
I think Jesus would be number one.
Okay.
I'd be amazed. People are like, wow, I can't believe he said that.
Would there be a second and third then?
Yeah, I would. Wouldn't it be amazing to talk to him and hear what goes on? And regardless if you're religious or not, I think that would be amazing. So Jesus would be one. I think General Mattis would be number two. General Mattis and Jesus, what a combination. The person that loves everybody and the person that's called Mad Dog, he hates that call sign. But I have read so much about General Mattis. I think General Mattis is a fantastic leader. General Mattis is the one-star general that goes up on post and relieves somebody on Christmas Day and tells them to go home. I think General Mattis has a cult following because people enjoyed working for leaders who care and who's dedicated to the mission. So General Mattis would be number two. Oh, man, number three. I'll pick one, but names that would come to my mind. I'd love to have dinner with General Patton. I think it would have been fantastic. I'd love to have dinner with General Washington. I think that would be fantastic. But I would pick somebody to the effect for my third one would be somebody like a Michael Jordan type, just to hear how he is so dedicated. You know, my son's going through some swimming stuff where he's getting to the next level. But I mean, Michael Jordan is just a champion, like just to sit down and pick his mind, the dedication, you know. And then I think about me sitting around a table with Jesus, General Madison, Michael Jordan. I tell you, there'd be some people saying, well, it's a wild crew. But I think that'd be the three that I just to hear their stories. I mean, obviously powerful with Jesus, but you know, General Mattis and Michael Jordan, that would be great. I don't know if your podcast is pulling General Mattis and Michael Jordan, but if they are, I'll buy dinner for you guys. I'll take you to Taco Cabana, some fancy place. I probably couldn't say that online.
I'll take Jalisco's right outside the gate.
Jalisco's, yeah. So say, hey, see, I was prepared for that one and you didn't give me any of these questions.
I led you a little bit.
Yeah, you led me, yeah. I got to think on my feet. So who would you have dinner with?
Oh, no. This is a podcast don't about think, you, kind
think,
sir.
I think I can't turn it on you. Who's your three? Baron von Steuben? Yeah.
How many times do we hear that, too?
I talk about Baron von Steuben. I can talk about Baron von Steuben all we want to. I think, anyway, I'll let you lead.
On that one, I would, right now, and again, it's on a day-to-day basis. If I was, you know, non-family members, you said Michael Jordan. I'd rather have a dinner with Kobe.
And I would be on. How could you go wrong with either one of them?
Because, you know, just that mama mentality, was a big fan of his book. I see a little bit of my, maybe some positive, but a lot of negative traits in that as well, as of that. Just, I learned that early on as a non-commissioned officer, by one of my mentors, Chief Faye Noyle. She would tell me, like, sometimes I would give up on people. Or especially as a young NCO, I give up on a couple of individuals in a flight. I'm not afraid to admit that, but I would do things because they weren't running at the pace I felt like they would run at. And rather than learning and Mike Tomlin them a little bit, would you be my next person? I'm gonna use all sports stars for this one because he says that word has got to be coachable, right? But to also, you're the coach. You've got, just because they turn pro doesn't mean
you got to be coachable.
Yeah, or you're done being a coach.
Sure.
Those are the type of things. I'm a huge boxing fan. So my last person would be probably Canelo Alvarez. You know, Mike
Tyson.
Yeah. Well, I listen to his podcast too, because he has a lot of great quotes. So actually,
dedicated too.
How about this? Our next question would be that it's, he uses it as a spinoff of JFK. That's been this fourth quarter. That's when I try to pick quarterly tie-ins for the messaging that I'm trying to message from my boss. You know, my boss is the culture, the mission, and the people. That's what our lines of effort that align with the Second Air Force and line with ATC, right? One of those, when it comes to people, JFK said it, but the Mike Tyson kind of paraphrased it and put his own thing. He said, I know a lot of great men, but I don't want to be a great man because a lot of great men aren't good men. I just want to be a good man. How does that resonate with you?
I think it resonates what do you want on your tombstone? Do you want people to be saying about you?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think about this more now I'm turning 50. What do you want people to say about you? I want to be known just as a good person, right? A person that cared about others. And that's another red area for me. Like, just go on the interstate out here at I-35 and practice caring. I mean, it's hard when people are driving like maniacs and cutting you off. But like, I always say that somebody's brother or sister, somebody's mother or dad, you don't know what kind of day they're having. But I think that, like, I'm not big into I don't like the camera on me. I don't like to make it about me. I never have, never will. What was the first question I asked you today? Am I on camera? And people get a little irritated when I say stuff like this, but sometimes when you're on a camera 24/7, you make it more about you and not what you should be making it about. So, but I'd rather be known as and obviously I've got a ton of work to do, but as a good person, not a great human, a humble person, you know, a caring person and a family person, right? If I can have those four things on, as people could say about Chad Bickley, when I leave this planet one day, I'd be happy with any of those, to be honest. Be happy with one of those, right? So I think it's a great quote.
So, yeah, it was like, I would say necessarily pulling teeth. We've known each other for a long time, but sure. I've asked you to be on the podcast.
Sure.
So one of the things that you, because you're saying, and I think this is kind of evolving into a different conversation, which is exactly what this podcast is meant to do, is just share your story and talk about, sure, talk through it. At the end of my career, I could feel the, I feel the coolness now. When you remember when you're a kid and you're out there playing and maybe in a pool or run through the sprinklers, and then the sun starts to set, and then you feel that coolness on you. Maybe you get the goosebumps or something like that, mm-hmm, but you know that the sun's starting to set. Well, I'm out there now. I know that. I know that this is likely the end of my career, sure, serving, yeah, the United States Air Force.
Yeah, we're all getting close if you're in a grade of chief, right? For sure.
One of the things I think about is like, well, how does my family think about me? If they had to describe me, how do I think my family would describe me? And I'll ask that question to you. I would hope they would say certain things, but how do you think Nikki and the kids will explain?
That's a great question. I think they would say, I think that they would say up front is loving, right? Caring, compassionate. I invest a lot of time in the family. Like I said, on the weekends, we tend not to do a lot because, you know, a lot of swimming and stuff. So when it's just us, we just tend to hang around the house. So so I invest in them a lot. Sometimes too gung-ho, right? Sometimes I bring getting the kids off to the bus. Nikki's a little bit more laid back than I am. I'm like, we're on a schedule.
No,
you know, yeah. Imagine that. Imagine that I treat it as if I'm marching a flight at the 323rd, stepping to initial clothing issue. We are not going to be late. And so I'm sure, you know, there's mornings that my kids are like, why in the world, you know, because dad's the backup team. Mom runs the house and she does a really good job of it. But I'm the one that's always like, let's go, let's move. We're late. We're burning daylight. You know, I'm sure they get a little irritated on that. But a lot of times some people see this. You've seen it for sure, Carlos. But I like to have fun too. Like, I'm the fun parent is what was said last night. And Nikki and me went back and forth on that. Like, I'll do stupid stuff with the kids where I'll drop about, you know, go from 49 to about 7 years old really quick. And they're not expecting it. And so, but I like to have fun. You've seen that side of me. Some people have not saw that side of me. Some people think I'm too hardcore. I'm too gung-ho. I'm too ate up. But I mean, you know, my execs see it a lot. The boss sees it a lot. But I have to be comfortable with you. But I think my family would say all good things. But obviously, there's some things that I need to work on too. Is, hey, sometimes you go home and you're exhausted. You got a short fuse, right?
Yep.
We all like that. And when we go home and we say things are perfect, then we start burying our heads in the sand. There's always things we can work on. But I think for the most part, it would be positive for them. And that to me is. That to me helps me sleep better at night because I don't care. You know, obviously I wanted a good military career, but I wanted a better resume as a parent, as a husband than I did as an airman. I want that resume to be good too. But once again, the Air Force will leave me one day. They always, you know, look, this is not a shot towards the Air Force, but they say they're with you for life. I sometimes wonder, I can tell you what, my family's with me for life. And I want to invest in them for sure.
My boss says that too. He's like, hey, it's a long date. It's not necessarily that you're married. Your marriage is your marriage, but this is a long date and you should get a lot out of it. But at the same time,
too many people, I'll say this real quick. Too many people I know that retire and that front row is empty. I'm not going to let that happen. Right. I'm taking my family with me. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, well, it's perfect because so we just came for the Gathering the Torch.
Sure.
Shauna was with us virtually. And, mm-hmm, you know, I was talking to her last night about like what we're going to talk about on the podcast and, you know, like kind of how I would sequence this thing and flow it out. And she's like, you have to ask him about family. That's why I was hitting this family so hard, because you're not just your closing remarks, but you and General Robinson. And I'm not like, I'm not here to kiss any ass. That's not what I'm here. But what I'm asking
is. I'm just glad you were the first one to use improper language and not me. But anyway.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah. the advice to the families. We've been, you know, like, we've been grinding a lot of years.
Yeah.
And you and Nick have been through a whole lot. What advice are we giving? Again, we're not on camera right now, but we have NCOs in here that are, you know, watching this podcast be recorded. What advice are you giving out there to the families?
So So let me pull that back a little bit at Gathering a Torch. What he meant is, in the end, I have been known to tear up, right? Like, it shocks.
I was going to say that.
Oh, I'm all right to say that. You know, I am completely all right. And you know, when I've teared up the most is as a chief. You know, when I left Mountain Home, my first base as a command chief, I teared up in front of the entire room, and it like to brought them to shock. I did the same thing in Baghdad, because I had a friend who was a chief. There was a senior master sergeant that was retired, and he was not a fan of her. And he was hard on her. And when she retired, I looked over at this chief and he was in tears. And he said, "You just look at things in a different perspective when you're a chief." And so at the end of our Gathering Torch, for those that don't know, Gathering Torch is where we bring all our wing command teams together across the command, and all our numbered air forces and our directorates and our spouses. And I just got choked up and I was emotional, because there are so many people that I know, I'm not going to share names, whose kids have cancer. They're getting after it each and every day. They have positive attitudes. You know, just a lot of people going through some challenges, and it just overwhelmed me. And I, you know, it shocks people to say, "Hey, Gunho Bickley," but I cry, I bleed, I have emotions too. What would I tell the families? Here's what I think. There's a book I read called Digital Liminalism. I think it's by Cal Newport. He's at MIT, and I think we're buried in our devices. Every time I talk to young couples, staff sergeants, tech sergeants, and they say, "Hey, my marriage is struggling. Tell me what you do." "Well, I go home at night and play Call of Duty 78 and shoot imaginary people and wizards and warriors and this crap, and my spouse is on their phone. And we wonder why we don't get along." The phones, and I'm not beating up on phones, but what I would say is, you have time for what you choose to have time for. And I thought about this weekend, as my son wanted to do something and I didn't want to do it. And I thought, man, I missed that opportunity with my son. He wanted to go Christmas shopping. I like Christmas shopping on Amazon. I missed an opportunity with my son this weekend. And I regretted that a little bit over the week. But I think we're so buried in our devices. I think we're, and look, the Bickleys are too. I will tell you right now, this is something we struggle with in our household, is everybody goes and does their thing on our device, and we don't come together as a family. So I would tell people is, you got to invest in each other, right? Is you have to make the connections. And I often think that we don't. And when you think about it, we deploy people on short notice. We send people to schools on short notice. We have people working 12 and 14 hours a day. As a defender, I would work 14 hours. I wasn't married at this time, but 14 hours a day, day upon day upon day. And you know me and you, Carlos, as MTIs, we'd work 16-hour days without days off for a long time.
Yep.
That impacts the family. So whatever time, here's what I tell people, whatever time you have with your family, you have got to make it work. Like, if you don't invest in that time, and you got to invest in yourself too, right? You got to invest in rest. You got to, but the thing is when you invest in yourself 75, 80% of the time, and 10 to 15% in your family, then we wonder why we have divorces. Then we wonder why we got all kinds of stuff going on, is you have to invest. And if you don't, and there's been times where I haven't invested in my relationship with my wife, and I can see me and my wife going in separate directions, and then we have to hold each other accountable. It says we need to invest in each other. Maybe go out on a date. Because I tell you what, when we go out on a date and we put our phones away, it's amazing what you talk about. But when you go on a date and one person's looking at a phone and the other person, why even go on a date, right?
Yeah.
So I tell you, you want to change your life, read this book, Digital Minimalism. And I tell you what, guess what we did in the Bickley house? For 30 days, we went digital free. And what happened was, is the problem is when people do this, is they don't know what to do and they have free time. That's the biggest challenge, is hey, we don't have a phone in front of us. Now, of course, I had work and there was things I had to do. And I value social media when you're deployed and you're able to do FaceTime and stuff. But we did things that are unheard of. We played Candyland. For God's sakes, I haven't played Candyland since I was 8 years old. And the kids love it when dad gets the flipping peanut and goes all the way from the top back to the bottom. But we did things, and we did all kinds of things that we wouldn't have done. And then we went away from that. And guess what? We're all doing our own separate things. So I just think that we don't invest in each other when we're at home. And I think devices dominate our time. That's very passionate about that. I think it's true. And I'm guilty too, right?
you talk about being this being your fifth command chief assignment.
Sure.
Both of us have done one of our things that we share is we've done the command chief position at different levels, but we've done this at a remote location, remote in Australia sure. location yeah. to where you're without the family. Very, very difficult, very, very hard to kind of nug through. How did you get through that time? Because for me, like, that's one of my biggest support. That is my biggest support network. When I go home, it's like, that's so I can vent. I could be
sure.
unapologetically at times me, you know, vulnerable, all those things. How'd you get through it?
So 13 deployments, two of which I did with family. Most of my deployments I did, me and my wife got married at 10 years. When I was single, I would get off a plane and go right back on another one. The first one I went to was Afghanistan. And that was when we just had our first kid, or we just had our boy at the time, and he was 2 years old, and that was rough.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, and I get emotional thinking about it, when I left to go to Baghdad for a year with a 4, 6, and 8-year-old, that was a gut shot for me. That was absolutely 100% the hardest thing that I've did in these 31 years. And I think about people that weren't like Chad Bickley, that they do that all the time, right? They're experts at it. I mean, we got staff sergeants that's been on 4 or 5 deployments and left, you know, a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 6-year-old. So I witnessed that at about year, 27. Was the first time I had to leave that, and it was gut-wrenching. My middle daughter still has fears that could happen again. How did I get through it? A lot of praying, there was a lot of me sitting around on Sundays. I mean, when you're in a combat zone, typically you get a half a day off on Sunday, and for that half a day off on Sunday, which I don't think you should have a whole lot of days. If we're off downrange for 2 or 3 days at a time, then we don't need you there, right? So half a day is what we got in Baghdad every Sunday. But I would do some feeling sorry for myself. I'm missing them. I mean, the kids would send me animals in bed. Once again, like, I'd have some high speed giraffe in the bed, you know. Hey, I just just let out to the world that I had a giraffe in the bed. But those are the little things that just a lot of FaceTime, right? But they also had a life to lead too, right? And so it was rough. And do I have an answer? I don't. I didn't have this perfect answer. And if somebody was looking and see what I did, it wasn't perfect, but it was really tough on my wife too. I mean, my wife went through some challenges, 3 kids and that. So it's tough. Best thing. But that is when I thank God we have social media. Thank God we have FaceTime, because in the old school days, once again, that would have been a phone call, a DSN line that maybe would work. You'd wait 15, 20 minutes to get on a line, and then you call and they weren't home. Talk about devastating. I couldn't imagine dealing with that, and I had to deal with that with young kids. So very blessed that we had that opportunity. But I'm not a blueprint for what success looked like. We had our struggles and challenges with that, for sure.
Yeah, it's a team sport, though, too. Like, when coming back, not a whole lot has changed in that aspect. All these serving, wearing this nation's cloth is difficult. It's sure. These are hard jobs. We get paid to do hard things. And one of the things that we've been working on here in the 37 that I think it, you know, directly correlates with the lines of effort that I think the Air Force is getting after and Air Education Training Command is, as a command chief, you get a chance to sit at the table and say, hey, what are you actually doing? So when I read the commander's intents from the squadron, and I hear the squad, go visit a squadron, what are you getting after? And they say, hey, I want to work on quality of life. And I was like, define it. What is quality of life? Because my quality of life may be different than a tech sergeant or a staff sergeant. Quality of life means different things to different people. Sure. And then quantify how you're going to develop that lines of effort. So one of the things that, you know, that we talked about in the Gather the Torch, one of the things I encourage the squadron command teams, group command teams, is like, okay, if quality of life is your effort, like us here at the wing, then what are we doing about it? What do we actually physically do? So as a squadron commander and squadron command team, you have all this great, you know, you have this significant amount of influence. What do your commander's calls look like to get after a line of effort? What are you doing? If quality of life is, time for working on marriages, working on that, what's your measure of effectiveness? is it happy marriages? You know, what is it, performance based? How many divorces you have in your section? Who are you bringing in to speak about that? Who in the digital minimalism is coming out there? Are you buying those books? Are you doing those videos? Or what are you doing to actually quantify those things in the squadron? That's one of the challenges I like to throw out to our teams, you know, because, and this isn't just the Carl Jamin experience. This is a lot of different people have given me these, you know, especially as a squadron chief, you have such a vast amount of influence on your team. Quality of life means not necessarily time off. It's the time off of what you're doing in that, to speak to your point. What are you doing and how am I preparing my non-commissioned officers, senior non-commissioned officers, CGOs and FGOs and airmen alike, everybody in the formation? What am I investing in them to make sure that they're putting down those phones? How am I doing these things? Who am I bringing in to speak? Sure. What am I valuing? What does time off look like? What is my actual battle rhythm set? How do I press the gas when I need to press the gas and communicate that out? A lot of things that we can do. So with that, I talked about the tiers just now. And we'll walk through just to kind of get foreshadow this a little bit. What do you feel makes a good, I would say, E4 and below in that airman tier? What do you feel good looks like?
Wow. I have never been asked that question. I always think before you're a good leader, you got to be a good follower. Yeah. You know, and I looked at, and I could base what I did as an E4, and that was a long time ago, but there was a sense of leading, right? I did have to lead. I had to be knowledgeable, right? But I also had to be a good follower. And I look back at those times and wonder, what could have I done better, right? Was I the supervisor? I hope I wasn't. Like, my supervisor didn't invest, didn't train, but I think you have to have a sense of caring. But I also think one good thing out of any leader is sometimes our airmen think, or leaders think, that they have to be perfect. More often than not, if our leaders aren't going to be perfect, but it's just if they make a mistake, owning that mistake and accountability. So every rank I would put in, I would thread accountability into every rank. But I, you know, good leader, good listener, eager to learn, but also a good follower, right? Learning. I think you're still learning a lot, but we put a lot of emphasis on our senior airmen, right? As that senior airman per se. So probably not the best answer, but that's what it sort of comes to my mind.
Well, let's fast forward then, and we'll kind of bypass some of the middle stuff for time's sake. What do you feel like a good chief makes?
Oh, or makes so I think a good chief is compassionate. I think a good chief is a listener. I think a good chief is unemotional. And we all have our moments where we have, I think a chief needs to lead from the front, right?
I'm out already.
Yep. I think a chief needs to lead from the front. I think a chief can't ask an airman to deploy and they haven't deployed in 15 years and they've tried to avoid deployments. I think a chief needs to be able to tell an airman whatever we tell an airman to do, that chief needs to do it and he need to back it up. I think a chief should be able to shut the door and have a very hard conversation with the commander. I think a chief needs to be a team player. When he comes out of the office, he or she comes out of the office, they don't use words like the commander. They use words like, we think this is the right thing to do. The chief should be the one that, sometimes it's very easy as a chief to say back in my day and walk around with one of these silly Stop and Rob coffee cups. It's like 8,000 pounds that you get at the Stop and Rob, and tell airmen how hard it was back in the day. But I think airmen want our leaders to care. And if you go out and something's wrong, they just want to know that you care, right? You go to the dorms, we go out in the dorms and sometimes I see first sergeants like, well, there's socks on the floor. You know, there's dust here. Go to Bickley's house. There's 10,000 pairs of socks on Bickley's kit's floor. But when you walk into dorms, I'm more concerned about that the heat don't work. You've seen me in the dorms when stuff doesn't go right.
Changing air filters.
Yeah, yeah. I'm more concerned that there's a rat's nest and air filter up there that we haven't changed in 6 months and we don't allow that airman to change it because, heaven forbid, they have stupid ladder training. And now I'll go down a tangent. But those are type of things is I want leaders, our airmen want leaders who care. They know we don't have more. We know we're not getting people. We know we're not getting money, but you have to acknowledge things. And when you have those conversations and you listen and acknowledge, and you don't beat around the bush and it's transparent, oftentimes people say, it's not what I wanted to hear, but at least I know it's transparent and it's the truth. But yeah, chiefs lead from the front. Like I hold more chiefs to the fire than I do anybody, because we talk a big game and we've got to back it up. And shame on us when we don't, right? And so I could go on long tangents on this, but we talk a big game and we got to back it up. We say we're chiefs, we got to lead from the front, and we got to own it, and we got to show airmen, hey, we're talking the talk and we're walking it as well. So
I'm going to tie that into a little bit of Mission Ready Airmen then. Right. When I look at it, I try to think as simplistic as possible. I'm an avionics professional as an aircraft maintainer, but I got to hold an APG. This is going to sound like a brag. And it's not like, please, it's not a humble brag or all the BS.
Justify any rush.
But I've been an avionics technician. I've been an APG. I've been a flying crew chief. I've been a military training instructor. I've been a first sergeant. I've served in various positions.
Sounds like you're multi-capable right there. Yeah.
And exactly how I look at, like when I would wear my designator, my patches and all that, when I look around the formation, and then what does all that say? If you read, like, you know, when we go or do our intros or we're moving around our formations. And at the end of the day, it's not just because I wanted to be a military training instructor. I necessarily didn't want to be a first sergeant, but I did definitely want to be a military training instructor. I definitely wanted to be a flying crew chief. I wanted to do these things, but also my nation asked me to do it. And as you progress and go through, it's exactly that. It's mission ready airmen. I can see that now 27 years later in my career, that I can say, hey, I've done these things. Sure. And it's been but the Air Force has also sent me to 7 continents. It's allowed me to do all these amazing things. Sure. And have these amazing experiences, but that's mission ready airmen to me. But what I say to your point is, as a maintainer, and especially on that, the chariot that's called the C-17 Alpha Globemaster III, my chariot, as an airman, I put a double bag my arm and I've reached in and grabbed stuff out to clear out that into the blue juice. I know that sounds pretty graphic, but I did it as an airman. I did it as a non-commissioned officer. And I did as a chief master sergeant. I will reach into that blue goo because they ask, if the nation asked me, because again, you've got to be able to, you know, if you pull post, if you're a flight chief, if you could go out there and get red X's, or, you know, you're certified to still do engine runs as a senior, as a chief, as a master, as a tech, you don't start losing those qualifications, because I know, you know, in this era of great power competition, if there's something that's going to come at me, I will do whatever you ask me to do. Well, it's whatever it is. You want me to go out there and launch jets and cash checks? I'll do that. You want me to change some tires? Sure, why not? You want me to go out there and push some flights? Mm-hmm. I can do that too. And those are the things I think that we get stuff kind of crossed up at times. That's the bare essential for, especially for our enlisted corps. And I'm inspired by watching. I'm looking over here at a multi-capable airman as well. I'm still looking at a military training instructor. I'm looking at a 3 Foxtrot that once was a defender. But if I asked her to, hey, can you go out there and pull post? I'm sure she can do that. I'm just speaking to the 2 people over here to my left. And that inspires me. What inspires you? What's out there inspiring you in our airmen, our formations, in our nation? What are you seeing out there that, you know, that as that comes to mind, what is inspiring you?
So I'm going to answer that question, but I'm going to talk about the mission ready airman thing. So I'm going to deviate here a little bit, because I've talked about this a lot, is sometimes as an Air Force over the years, we fail to message things properly at the half level and at the squadron level. You know, we got this big deal. We're dealing with standards right now, and we have people going back and forth. But I sometimes feel like we need to turn the ball on us and say, you know, what are we saying as leaders, right? As for standards, like, I don't think we message stuff properly. Things are going to change in our military. We're going to have to adapt and overcome. We do not adapt and overcome with standards and discipline. That's what builds a fighting force. But how do we message this? The multi-capable airmen, you know, I think we've allowed people to message that have turned us into do more with less, right? And I'm trying to reduce a footprint in a highly saturated combat zone. It's not doing more with less. And when you go down range, people do whatever they need to do to get the mission done, right? It's, and so I digress here a little bit, but I think we've got to message this stuff properly. But I look at us as the leaders of what we're failing to do. I'm inspired with our airmen each and every day. I mean, I'll take you as a maintainer, for example. I show up to, you know, as a mountain home as a command chief out with the Strike Eagles, and I go out and watch a A1C tear aircraft apart.
Yep.
And there's parts, I mean, and they're geniuses to put these aircrafts together. Then you look at the KC-135 flown into Eisenhower Air, right? Look at the B-52. What our airmen do each and every day with reduced supply parts, right? Supply parts, these aircraft are old. They're still not making the parts. And what our airmen do each and every day to get those aircraft in the air is amazing. Right off the bat with our maintainers is absolutely amazing what they do. And they bring readiness to aircraft that should have been parked ages ago, and they do it each and every day. The willpower, the desire to get things done. Our airmen want to get things done when they, whether it's at, you're at the clinic, what are MPF or what is, I'm not a big fan of throwing rocks at other AFSCs. You know, maintainers want to beat up on FSS. FSS wants to beat up on them. The med group, this, all of us have challenges each and every day. I tell the people that want to take a run at CPTS, when's the last time you went over and looked at the antiquated technology they're using on the computers that we've given them, right? There's certain things, we're still in the 1980s. We've got to come up to speed, but our airmen oftentimes take those things and make magic happen each and every day. So I'm inspired with what our airmen do each and every day. Think about what they do. And I could pick one, I could pick others. But everything they do, it's just, they're oftentimes long hours. Sometimes they don't have what they need to do, and they make it work, and they make it look really good, and they make it look easy oftentimes too. I think sometimes we take our airmen for granted. That, I tell you, man, I get sick of hearing these airmen nowadays. Our airmen are so smart, right? I could go on a long tangent on that, but you're hitting on points that are very passionate to me. Our airmen are just fine today, right? Our airmen are smarter than Chad Bickley ever was when he came in. And you know what? We're going to be just fine. If we have to cross the ocean one day, or somebody comes at us, I will be good one day when I'm retired, knowing that we'll be ready to fight. I don't lose 1 minute of sleep at night like others. Oh, what's all right? I don't lose a second of sleep. We're in great hands. I see it each and every day. 65,000 airmen AATC. We're just fine. That's the inspiration that gets me. That's my, it gets my heartbeat. You start feeling sorry for yourself, go find an airman. You know, you're a leader. You have a base, has a flight line. You start feeling sorry for yourself, go to the flight line. Go to the clinic. Go to MPF. Sit back and talk to your airman. And if that doesn't rejuvenate you, then it's time to hit the button and go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with that, that wraps up this podcast. That wraps up this episode, and I appreciate your time. I know you're busy. You're a busy man with a busy schedule and getting after a lot of different things as we transfer over from Air Education Training Command to Airman Development Command, and all the things that we're doing to build mission ready airmen for a great power competition. I appreciate you having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for doing this. You don't have to do this. You know, I'm going to brag. He's going to get pissed. I don't care. I want to brag on your command chief. He's one of the best I have in AATC command. He cares. He's passionate. You don't have to do this. You do it because you care. You're not doing this to, hey, look at me, how you like me now. You know, I wouldn't be doing this if you were doing that. If you're like, hey, look at me, I'm Carlos Damon, I'm having a podcast, look how wonderful I am, I would not be here now. So you are one of our chiefs in the Air Force that get it. You get out, you move after it, you put the mission first. You can't have the mission first if you don't take care of the airmen, and you take care of the airmen. I'm super proud to have you on this team, super proud that we got to serve together. And my final remarks to whoever's hears us, AETC or the Air Force, is never forget where you came from, right? Never forget that what you do each and every day in this uniform means something. I have the days, like I say, where you start feeling sorry for yourself. You start feeling sorry for yourself. Think about Cunningham in Afghanistan, and that should just clinch your feeling sorry for yourself. What people did for us to wear this cloth of our nation, to get up each and every day in a place where we don't have to worry about rockets coming in, bombs going off. We take that for granted each and every day. And I'm proud to do this and continue to serve. Thanks. Thanks for all you do for our Air Force. And I tell you, this is why, that's why we don't lose wars, because of our people.
Yep.
We're the best military in the world. This is what separates us from the winners and the losers. Our technology, our training, our people, and our standards and discipline is what causes us to be winners, and we're going to continue to be winners. And thanks for letting me do this again. I really appreciate everything that's going on at 37th. Our Air Force sometimes goes as the 37th goes. You think about it, right? You think about basic training. You think about the skill sets. But, you know, oftentimes I come to the 37th, and this is the last thing I'll wrap up as we talk MTI. We talk MTI. Let me tell you what, the 37th is full. Our MTIs are great. So are our MTLs. So are our podium instructors. So are the people that are in the background with our 502nd teammates here that are getting the job done. So we got a lot of world-class airmen that come through here. But I tell you what, in 37th and Air Chief Train Command, if we don't get it right, the Air Force doesn't get it right. And I take that very seriously, and I know you guys do each and every day. So Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Thanks for all you do, and thanks for letting me come down.
Awesome. Teammates, thank you for tuning in. For any topics, questions, or guest requests, please shoot me an email or leave a comment below. Thanks for tuning in. As a reminder to all listeners, all topics discussed are unclassified, and the views expressed by our guests and hosts are not necessarily the position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or any government agency.